What's up, Redemption Church? What's up? It's the drag, right? It's like, man, it's been raining so hard. It's been so dark out. Now we got daylight savings that saves nothing. It's terrible. Gee-man-y, man, alive. And now we're at it today. So good to be with you this morning. A couple of little housekeeping things before I get underway. One is what Trent was just kind of talking about. I just wanted to roll behind it and push it that we are having a Connection lunch on November 10th. And if I've never had a chance to meet you, I'm going to be there. Some of our other leaders and elders are going to be there. And we just want to double push this one because, again, we're seeing new faces and we want to make sure that people are feeling connected. Part of things feeling like they're building some relationship too. And we have found so often when people go to these events, it's like new people meet other new people, and that friendship kind of becomes a bonding agent. So that's gonna be super rad. So be thinking about that. Let us know if you're gonna come. And then also on that day, we're gonna have a new members class. And maybe you're not interested in membership yet. You just want to find out more about Redemption, what makes us tick, that kind of thing. It's gonna be at 1:30 right after the lunch. Yes, a long afternoon, I know, but we're gonna put it all together on that day. So you can think about that. Also related to membership, to our members that are in the room or watching online, we have a new candidate that's going to be stepping onto the board, Steve Westerside, which, by the way, yes, A, clap. B, I just think that is like a cool picture. Like, he's just looking in the distance like, I know stuff y'all don't know. You know, like, it's just... And he's British, and that's why. Just smarter automatically, you know. The accent just, man, IQ goes up 50 points just because the accent alone. It's awesome. So anyway, we are going to be sending out an email to all of the members. So you want to keep an eye out for that because we're going to have this affirmational vote for Steve coming up. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to do it all digital, so all the more you're going to want to pay attention to that. You could turn in the paper if you want, but we're going to do it in kind of a creative way. We've done it that way before. We're going to do it that way again, so you want to make sure you are aware of that. Now, speaking of affirmations and elections, today is all about politics. Man, I'm loving that vibe right there. That's fantastic. That's perfect. And I'm feeling good because I did like 5 or 6 doses of cough syrup this morning, so I feel like I'm ready to go. If anything happens, just blame it on the drugs, man. All right, so here's the thing. It is the week of politics. I get it. It's the week of the election. Maybe by President's Day, we'll actually know who's president. But this week, probably nothing is getting solved, right? And yet, just even the idea of talking about this subject can make some people kind of nervous or whatever else. But really, I have a heart behind this thing. And I want to talk about this idea of how we bring faith to partisan politics. So the topic of the day is faith and or partisan politics. But my hope in all of this is to get more to the and less the or. But I get that this is sort of a challenging topic. And even for some of us, it can be like, man, I feel the weight of my chest. You know that Thanksgiving's coming and there's going to be discussions and all of that stuff. Like, it's all in there. And so I want to see if we can kind of deal with this from a different perspective. Now, as I get underway, I'm going to do something that I think some people wouldn't choose to do, but I'm going to choose to do for good or bad, and I'm going to give you a personal disclaimer. I'm going to let you know roughly where I'm coming from, and I do this for a reason. I don't like it when I'm listening to somebody, and I'm like, are you trying to play me? You're trying to manipulate me? Are you coming from this side, but you really do that side, and you're trying to do this? I get that. I want to kind of take that off the plate. Now, I want to start in something I talked about last week, which is as an evangelical pastor for 30 years, I've always kind of been in this weird space where I'm too conservative for the liberals and too liberal for the conservatives. But when you're in an evangelical church, that tends to be more on the conservative side of the spectrum politically. And so from that, I've had many people go, you're just a liberal. Because most of my associations were people that are more conservative, right? And depending on where you are on that spectrum, I may fall a little bit left of you, depends. I might fall a little bit right of you, it depends. But I've always kind of had this, you're just a liberal. So I'm going to let you know for the record, I am a registered Republican. Some people are like, no, he's a liar. No, it's the truth. I'm a registered Republican. And in that, I have a certain way of how I go about trying to make decisions, which are frankly less about policy and less about platform. I was reared in that GOP of like, hey, character matters, character counts. In fact, if you look at George Washington and you read biographies on his life, not the greatest general technically. Like most accounts will say, lost a lot of battles, made a lot of missed calls. What carried Washington through was he was a man of character and integrity. And I'm probably always going to kind of look through that lens. Now, in light of that, I will let you know, over the last 30 plus years of being an adult, I've voted all across the spectrum. I have voted for more than one Republican for president. I've voted for more than one Democrat for president. I have sat out more than one election entirely, and once I voted for Jesus. Literally, I wrote in Jesus on the ballot, right? I did that, and then I uploaded it to social media, and I said I voted for Jesus, and I got more hell for voting for Jesus than any other time ever, legitimately. I mean, I had people coming out of the woodwork, and they were scolding me, and they were angry, and they're like, how dare you vote for Jesus? I'm like, because he saved me. Like, you know, like, I feel like that's a thing, you know? And it was like, no, you're not allowed to do that. That was the thing I got. You can't do that. So I'm like, okay, let me get it straight. So I have to vote as a Christian. Yes, you have to vote. But I can't vote for Jesus. No, he's not a real person in the election. Okay, fine. So I have to vote for one of the two parties in the election that's a viable candidate. Yes, and I can truly vote for either one. No. And then there's this thing, right, where you're just like, so depending on where I'm landing in this whole conversation, I guess that's the deciding factor, right? And then it depends on the kind of church you're in. I have friends that I just deeply love that are in what we call mainline churches. So this might be like a United Methodist Church, an Episcopalian church, certain kind of Lutheran churches, whatever it is. And they'll be like, you know what? You can vote for your you want, but if you want to vote for Hitler, that's your call, you know? And you're like, really? But that's the way they see it in those churches. And if you're in a conservative church, like, hey, vote for whoever you want, but if you're going for Stalin, that's up to you, man. Maybe hell's not so hot, you know? And so it's like, where do I land in all of this? What do you do in all of this? In fact, this week I came across a cartoon that both, I thought, captured the essence perfect and made me laugh. Here it is right here. Your mother and I are separating because I want what's best for the country and your mother doesn't. Pretty good, right? And that's kind of the way this starts to play out, right? Like each side is looking at the other side saying, you're less American. You don't care about the country. You're against what's best for all of us. And there's just this, you're not patriotic, all these things that go down the road, all this name-calling garbage to where it gets polarized, just polarized. To where the way people start to articulate it is, you can be a person of faith or you can be a racist, homophobic, conservative fascist. Like, oh, thank you for that. Or you can be a person of faith, but if you're not like us, you're a communist, perverse, woke, liberal, and you feel like the pressure there. My advocacy for the day is faith and. I really believe you can be a sincere, genuine, Bible-believing, Jesus-loving, kingdom-wanting person, and you can land in the R. Or you can land in the D, or you can land in the other, and all of that. And I'm saying that even as I'm having really great conversations with dear friends that I love, I trust, and I know their faith is deep and sincere, and their default is Jesus every time. And when I'm talking with them in the last several months, man, they're motivated by different angles of their heart and care for the stuff of Jesus. I have friends who are deep, deep, like, MAGA supporting, hardcore Trump, just all, he's the best person to ever have run for president, and they deeply love Jesus, and they deeply want kingdom things. I know of other people that are like, you know what? He's not the person I would choose. This is not the guy I would want to entrust, but that's my party and the policies I agree with, and so I'm going to go down that road because I think that's Jesus' best. And I know people that are voting for Harris, and they're like, you know what? We really believe that what she advocates for, man, that's really where we see the values of Jesus, whether it be the orphans or the widows or the homeless. Like, everybody's got their thing. And others are like, man, I'm holding my nose with her, and I'm voting that way. And then there's others who are just like, I'm going to put Jesus and get hell for it, all right? So, like all of that is kind of in there. And so for us today, I want us to try to at least look a little bit, think about a little bit, and maybe try to have a little bit more grace and understanding and maybe some flexibility as everybody's trying to work within their conscience and trying to work through what is it that they feel Jesus has most compelled them to care about, because I think that's a lot of it. Now, with all that said, I told you throughout the series, I'm going to give you book ideas. Here's four book ideas, because I really love you to give you four book ideas. That first one over there, it's really just about how we can idolize our politics, right? And like, that's going to save us if we get this person in or that person in or this government or that government or this administration or that administration. That's going to fix us, save us, rescue us. And maybe we need to think about that. That one on church and politics, that one's fascinating because it's not what you would anticipate. Like, have you ever wondered why so often the black church votes one way and the white church votes another way? It kind of gets into the weeds of that, and it's a really interesting book. The third one I love because neither of those dudes are from the United States, all right? So sometimes you find that evangelicals from other parts of the world highlight some of our own myopic things, and they kind of bring out some things, and they bring it back to Jesus and kingdom. And then the last one, other end of the spectrum, this guy is a Jewish atheist, right? But he does a deep dive into some of the things that may most drive us. And if you want to be really, really like have your brain twisted, check that one out. It's a great one. So anyway, I'm going to stop with that. I'm going to pray right now. Remind you, we have an app with notes. There are some things in the notes today you might want as a resource for you going forward. But we're going to go and pray, get underway, and then see what comes out for today. Jesus, I thank you for your love and faithfulness to us. And I thank you that what you did when you came into the world is you just didn't play by the normal rules. But we're conditioned to the rules, and we want to find this side or that side to the rules, and you're always disrupting that. And so I pray that we are kind of sitting up today, leaning forward, hearing from you, accepting the challenge, and even knowing that, man, the application for any one of us may be very opposite than the other, but it still comes back to we're trying to figure out how to honor you and honor your kingdom ideals. So help us, Jesus, guide us and show us in your good and kind name. Amen. All right, so right now I need all of the Republicans to go to that side of the room. I need all the Democrats to go to that side of the room. I need all the moderates to go to the middle here because that's the way it works. No, I don't need to do that. Again, my goal is not to shame you. My goal is not to sway you. My goal is not to moralize this vote is better than that vote. I'm not doing any of that. That's not my heart. My heart is to center on Jesus and yet to work through how we do that in kind of trying times. And so the place I want to start is this idea of Jesus and the myth of a partisan Messiah, right? Like if we wanted to take Jesus and make him the poster child for one party or the other, we would probably really struggle to do so. Now, people attempt to do this. In fact, this week I looked up Republican Jesus and Democrat Jesus. These are some of the pictures that I got. Like Jesus the gun-toting, money-loving, you know, Jesus. And then the peace and love flower child Jesus. And I'm pretty certain that neither of these in any way accurately represent Jesus. And here's why I know. Jesus was not born an American. He wasn't born in America. He was not wrapped in the American flag and placed in the manger. Like none of that. Thousands of years before we were here, right? Like Jesus was a thing, and Jesus was speaking into a world that's different than ours. And so from that, we need to be careful that we don't take Jesus to go, oh no, we can make him this party's asset or that party's asset. Because the thing I'm going to keep coming back to again and again today is Jesus just refuses to play by these rules of you can put me in a group and call it good. In fact, we're going to do a little quiz test for fun. We're going to look at the little liberal Lord Jesus or the conservative Christ, right? And I'm going to do this by just, hey, one of these ideas we find in the Bible and one we don't. And then where does it most align? Is he most little Lord liberal Jesus or is he mostly the conservative Christ? So where does the Bible say? Does the Bible say he who lives by the sword dies by the sword? Does the Bible say the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed? Now, I like the Bill of Rights, but doesn't fit in the Bible. It's not from the Bible. How about this next one? If a person will not work, let them get in the system. Or does the Bible say if a person will not work, neither shall they eat? Paul said that. So little Lord Jesus that's a liberal loses on that one. Next one. If anyone asks you for a tunic, you give him your cloak as well. If anyone asks for your tunic, tell them to get a job. All right. How about the next one? Defund the Roman authorities or be subject to the governing authorities. Sorry, little liberal Lord Jesus. How about this next one? Deport the foreigner or welcome the foreigner? Deport the foreigner is not something in the Bible. How about this next one after that? The parable of the talents illustrates the problem of inequality and racism in the marketplace. Or the parable of the talents illustrates the importance of individual responsibility and hard work. Jesus pretty much focuses more on that, right? So now we're at a stalemate. It's stuck. We're third period's gone. Overtime's there. It's the shootout. How do we make the divide? How do we settle this? Is it liberal or conservative? Let's get to the animal that Jesus rode into Jerusalem on. Donkey or elephant? Trent, sorry. Jesus is a lib. I guess that's all it has. You know, like, this would be so dumb, right? It'd be so dumb. But this is kind of the stuff we want to look at. My point is to say, you know, here's the deal. When you attempt to try to isolate him to one or the other, he just, again, is going to be squirrely and get out of that. Because it's like, you're missing what I'm addressing. I'm trying to deal with something deeper, more nuanced, more complex, needs more wisdom to navigate. And so we can't just be as simple as like, oh, here's the way we're going to make these conclusions and decisions, because it's always going to be a little bit trickier. Now, here's what I'm going to say as a Bible teacher. This may be a little bit weird for some of you, but I think you're going to get it. There is the reality that we can all make the Bible say whatever we want. We can. It happens all the time, right? And the same is going to be true in this arena. It's not hard, right? If you're coming with certain ways of seeing it to then make it say a certain thing. So let me give you this example in a broader category, right? So we all as people, whether you're legally here, illegally here, you're white, you're black, you're somewhere between, you're a male, a female, whatever it is, we all live in life and culture and this sense of existence in the world, and we're all coming at this kind of from different angles, right? That's just the existence of things. But then how you see those dynamics, that sphere of life, is going to be different depending on the lenses you bring to this point of view. So, for example, here's the lenses that I put together this week. You will have a religious beliefs lens, a social position lens, a life experience lens, and then your political view lens. And all of that's going to shape it. Right? So if for example, you grew up in a really comfortable home and your parents stayed together the whole time and they really dug each other, that's going to be a very different life experience view than, like, for example, I was raised by a single mom in a low-income apartment complex, and those had certain challenges with another child that had a handicap, right? So life experience. Or if you were raised in a certain political climate, you're going to see things from that point of view. So it doesn't really matter what it is. Depending on the religious background you have, whether it was really legalistic or more light, whether it was Catholic or Protestant, all of that's going to shape it. And so we just need to be honest about that. Nobody really comes to the Bible even and is just tabula rasa, clean slate, totally objective. We're all kind of bringing things that we look at and look through to make decisions. And so with that, just think about the Bible, right? All of these different things that we are bringing into the study of it is going to then sometimes drive how we read it. Or maybe to say it differently, it's going to cause us to go, oh, I notice those things, and I might kind of almost like disassociate those things. I might elevate these and then kind of go like, I don't know what to do with that, so I'll put it over there because it doesn't fit. Forgetting that sometimes what the Bible wants to do is create tension. So it's not as easy as just this or just that, but there's like this squeeze in between. But if we're not trying to be aware of that, we can make it say what we want it to say. So let me go ahead and give an example of this. We'll pick a topic that's really easy. We're going to pick legal immigration and border debates. Because when I listen to the left and the right now, it pretty much comes down to both are saying the border, and the one's talking about basically pro-life and the other's about protecting trans rights. And other than that, it seems like it's just a scramble of stuff, right? Like that, this seems to be the strength of the debate. So this one's a big one for both sides, right? But when you read the Bible coming through your filter, each side can find a way to kind of defend its position. So for example, on the conservative Christ side, they might look at Romans 13, understandably. It says, everyone must submit to governing authorities, for all authority comes from God, and from those in positions of authority, they've been placed there by God. So anyone who rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and they shall be punished. And I've talked to many friends that have very strong opinions about the border, and much of their argument is law and order. They're breaking the law. It's illegal immigration. It's a legal border crossing. And so we need to bring law to bear and stop this, because again, the Bible endorses that. I go, Romans 13 very much empowers government to be an authority to maintain law. 100% true. But then a liberal will step in. They'll go, but what about Deuteronomy 10? For the Lord your God is the God of gods and Lord of lords, and he is the great God, the mighty and awesome God, who shows no partiality and cannot be bribed. He ensures that the orphans and the widows receive justice. He shows love to the foreigners living among you and gives them food and clothing, so you too must show love to the foreigner. And notice that the love is by clothing them and feeding them. Like, so you have these texts in tension. And this is the problem of the Bible. The Bible just constantly is pesky and says, I'm not going to play by your rules. I'm not going to be forced into just A or B, but I want you to struggle with truths in conflict, truths in tension. Now, part of the reason it does this is because, again, it's not written by Americans. It's not written for Americans. It was written before America. So it's dealing with other things in its own times and places. But what it does do for us is it disrupts just the constant echo chamber of whatever side we tend to listen to the most. And it just says, you know what, you can't just reduce it down to a simple binary decision. Because over the course of time, if there's anything I've begun to really see, and this is just my own opinion, so you can take it or leave it, but I think what happens, because I think I do this too, we just kind of pick and choose. Right? We just pick and choose. Like, I like that part of the Bible. I take it. Oh, that part disrupts this idea. So I just pretend like it's not. I didn't even notice that it was in Amos. Wow. You know, I don't ever read Amos. It's really convenient. No, whatever it is, right? Like, that's just kind of the tendency of what we tend to do. And so I was really struggling this week just with this notion of, would Jesus be a conservative or a liberal? Like, just that idea. And so I'm like, man, I need an objective thing. Right? Like, I'm a fan of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Any fans? A few. I needed deep thought. That's what I needed. I needed the supercomputer to ask the question, and then I realized I have a superish kind of, a deepish thought, if you will. I have ChatGPT. I have AI, man. I got Copilot, baby. I can ask this objective supercomputer, objective, but still, supercomputer, I can ask it the question, why was Jesus a liberal or why was Jesus a conservative? Just give me the defense. Here's what it gave me. I'm going to read each. I asked, how was Jesus a liberal? He said, well, Jesus' teaching often emphasized compassion, social justice, and care for the marginalized. He challenged the status quo, advocated for the poor and oppressed, and He constantly promoted love and forgiveness over strict adherence to the law. He was inclusive and exercised radical love, and that kind of aligns with more of a progressive view. But then it also said, when I asked about Jesus being conservative, they said, well, hey, man, he's all about personal responsibility, moral values, family values, and the importance of family principles, the sanctity of life, promoted traditional moral teaching, adherence to faith and religious practice. His message was that really of, again, ethical standard and expecting you to kind of walk on your own 2 feet and be responsible to your life, and that's what made him kind of a conservative. And when I looked at both of those, I'm like, yeah. Like, I get it, right? I can see how those lines cut both ways, right? It makes sense to me that deepish thought would come to that conclusion, because honestly, when I try to write down the pros and cons, I kind of come to this similar conclusion. So then what I realized as I was working it through this week, I'm like, what we're doing is both sides want a Solomon Jesus. They want a Solomon Jesus. Now, you may go, I don't know where he's going with this, so hold tight. All right, so here's the thing. There was this story where there's these two moms, and they each had a baby, and then one of the moms, the baby dies. And so the mom whose baby dies, she steals this other woman's baby, and then the other woman wants her baby back, and so they get into a fight. They're both claiming that this is their child, but there's only one baby, two moms, it's a problem. So they go to Solomon, and they're like, Solomon, what are we to do? We're both fighting over this child, and Solomon has this novel idea, just cut the baby in half, and you each get a half. That sounds twisted. But I think what happens in our party debates is both sides take Jesus and they want to pull a Solomon. So I made a little cartoon for it this week, right? So it was hard to find baby face Jesus to put on the baby there, but I found a baby face Jesus finally. And this is what both sides kind of do, right? Both sides will say, hey, I like what Jesus said there. I like what the Bible says there. We're going to take that part. But then there's other things that are contrary to what I think, and I'm going to just downplay that part. And I keep emphasizing this because I think as followers of Jesus, we need to look at it differently, right? We don't want to parse out scripture. We don't want to parse out Jesus, right? We want to let Jesus be Jesus. Where I think where he's at his best is he's disrupting either side. Endorsing some things, validating some things, disrupting some things. Reminding us that the way he does business is different than the way the world does business, and we want to inject some of that into whatever side we're on, right? That's the heart. In fact, wildly enough, after I asked Copilot, hey, how is Jesus a liberal? How is Jesus a conservative? At the end of both statements, it gave me a warning. That's the best. And in both it said, it's important to remember that Jesus' message transcends political labels. It's meant to inspire people across the spectrums or guide people universally. Like, I love the fact that it takes our non-human computer to remind us that Jesus doesn't fit the standard of what we want. And if we try to, honestly, what we're doing is we're just ripping them in two. We're biting away the chunks that we want and then the chunks that we want to spit out. It's just like that's sort of the tendency and the problem. And so this is what I'm trying to disrupt. Now, as a freebie, there's this image here. I'm going to show you this next image. It's also in your app. It's a little harder to read on the screen. It was just cool. I can't even use it. I just wanted you to have it. It's this infographic where they gather all of this data, and then they kind of bring it down into, hey, you're a conservative if this is sort of your values. You're a liberal if this is sort of your values. And I was looking at the whole thing, and I was starting to circle on both sides. Hey, that's a Jesus thing. Oh, but hey, that's a Jesus thing over there, too. And then this is not a Jesus thing over here, and this is not a Jesus thing over here. And you just start to see that, like, he both rebukes each side, and he might endorse different parts of each side. And so when the Seahawks are probably losing today and you're frustrated, you can bring this up, and you can play the Where's Waldo of Jesus in this whole diagram. And it's fascinating. Even some of the stuff, you're like, oh, that's true. That's interesting. Yeah, I get that. Right? It's fascinating, right? And it probably goes back even to that Righteous Mind book I talked about. There's just intuitions in us that sort of drive some things and that kind of materialize in these fashions. But all of that to say that, you know what? Maybe we need to think about things a little different, right? Again, not about just strict party and affiliation and vote, but thinking with wisdom and thinking with the mind of Jesus and the heart of Jesus and thinking like kingdom. And so with that, I want to start to look directly at some things with Jesus, just some examples of what he did. And so in the taking of notes this morning, there's this idea of Jesus and extra partisan objectivity. Jesus and extra partisan objectivity. Because here's the thing, Jesus lived in a partisan world, like 100%. The Sadducees were very pro-Rome. The Pharisees were very anti-Rome. Constantly, they were pinging them on, what do you think about these things, right? So that was true. And in this, Jesus was often very despised by the real religious, like, power brokers, the Pharisees and those who were more conservative. They were riding his tail all the time, getting on his case, didn't like what he liked, all that stuff, and eventually conspired to kill him, right? So it's a thing. But in light of that, there's this weird thing in Matthew 23, and Jesus says to the crowds and to his disciples, the teachers of the religious law and the Pharisees are the official interpreters of the law of Moses, so practice and obey whatever they tell you. The people that don't like Jesus critique him all the time, want him dead, constantly try to trap him. He actually says, hey, when they're doing this job, listen to them. He says, but don't follow their example, right? For they don't practice what they teach. They crush people with unbearable religious demands and never lift a finger to ease the burden. Here's what I love about this. Where he can praise something, he praises it. If he needs to critique something, he critiques it. Right? But he didn't get so polarized that he's like, you're against me, I can never say a good thing about you. You're against me, so I will dismantle you at every turn. You get no credit for anything ever. He's like, nope, that's not the way we play here. He's like, when they do it right, awesome, they're doing it right. If they're hurting people, if they're going against the marginalized, if they're saying something's unfactual, whatever it is, if they're creating burdens to everything there, he calls it out. And it wasn't just with the religious people, even his own disciples, right? It's like sometimes he scolds them and sometimes he praises them. Like he just doesn't care about, well, what's my party? What's my group? What's my tribe? He's like, no, I care about what is true and I care about what is wrong and I'm going to advocate for those things. That's the heart of Jesus. In this sense, he was an equal opportunity offender and an equal opportunity praiser. But not based on my tribe and your tribe, just based on right and wrong. Right? Always looking at it that way, right? That was his objective. Next, I want to look at Jesus and extra-partisan perspective, right? Extra-partisan perspective. Too many peas this morning for me, apparently. Too much of that cough syrup again. All right, so here's the thing about partisanship. It's all driven by dogma. And usually the dogma is very polarizing, right? Even think about our debate about abortion in our culture. What you have in conflict are two high values of our culture in conflict. You have some people pursuing life and others pursuing liberty, which is kind of like two key words to what we do. So it creates this dogma, very divided, over things that we conceptually hold dear. So it's this weird tension. Or it's pro-gun or anti-gun, or it's nationalism or globalism. Like the dogmas require this because this kind of feeds the base, which feeds the system and everything else. So we're in this kind of like very partisan mindset. And if you try to be like mostly partisan but cross over into something opposite, the dogma will get you, right? So for example, if I own an AR and I'm a happy gun owner and I like the Second Amendment, and I wear a t-shirt to a gun show that says, we need more gun control. Doesn't matter, I like the Second Amendment. Doesn't matter that I own a gun. Doesn't matter any of that. I'm in trouble. I'm a fish out of water. Or if I am somebody that's pro-life, but I'm a Democrat, and I go to a Democrat convention, and I wear a, I vote life, fish out of water, you're dead. You're breaking the dogma rule. Right? And that's kind of the problem in all of it. But when I look at Jesus, I see that he's like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not worrying about that. I'm marching to the beat of a very different drum. So there's this occasion. Jesus is normal. He deals with religion, and religion does something hypocritical, and so he calls out their hypocrisy, and now they're all butthurt, and they want to bust him for something. So there's this scene where it says they were waiting for an opportunity in Luke 20. And so watching for their opportunity, the leader sent spies pretending to be honest men, which is awesome. You got to fake being honest, right? So they're pretending to be honest men, and they try to get Jesus to say something that could be reported to the Roman governor so they would arrest Jesus. So they come and they say, teacher, we know that you speak and teach what is right, and you are not influenced by what others think. You teach the way of God truthfully, and so tell us, is it right for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not? So I love the way they're buttering it up. Oh, you're so good, you're smart, you're so kind, you're so good, man. And then they spring the question. And the question is partisan. 100% partisan. This was a political issue in their day. We have border dispute, they had tax dispute, right? This was a thing. And the question is not, is it okay to avoid taxes? That's not the question, right? Because taxes were unavoidable in their culture. We can sort of try to get away with it for a couple of years. You just couldn't there. It was a very different system. So the question isn't, is it okay to avoid it? The question has to do with one's attitude in relationship to taxes. So in other words, what they're asking is, hey, Jesus, when it comes to taxes, should it be something where we go, it's evil but required? Or is it neutral and expected? Or is it good and honorable, right? To do this to Caesar, who uses the money to oppress us, is it evil, is it neutral, or is it good? That's what they're asking Jesus. And say they're really excited about the question, because if Jesus says, well, it's clearly evil, Caesar thinks he's God, that's a problem, he's a problem, and it's bad, then they're going to get Jesus for sedition. They're going to say to the Roman authorities, he's trying to get people stirred up so they don't pay taxes, go after him, and so they win. But if Jesus says neutral or good and honorable, then in the eyes of the Jewish population, they're going to be like, oh, he's a traitor. Because we all know it's evil. It can't be neutral or good. So I'm sure these guys are thinking, like, pat themselves on the back. Oh, man, he's damned if he does. He's damned if he doesn't. We got a win-win on our hands, right? Jesus is going to lose on this one no matter what happens. But their binary trap is really a trap for themselves. It says in verse 23, he saw through their trickery, and he said, show me a Roman coin. And then he said, whose picture and title are stamped on it? And they're like, Caesar's, right? They already know it's coming. Caesar's. He says, well then, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what belongs to God. See, I love this because, again, he just disrupts this whole idea of earthly dualism. Us, them, Israel, Rome, left, right. He's like, whatever. Whatever. In fact, for the follower of Jesus, here's his focus. Earth does earth stuff. You get to do kingdom stuff. Earth will do it in earthly ways. You get to do it in Jesus-like ways. So you don't get to fall into the trap of left or right is best, but rather kingdom in its heart is best, right? Because the way the world does business is just worldly. That's what it's going to do. And we have to figure out how we can bring something different to the equation, right? If anything, I would say what we're having to realize and remember, myself included, is that there is a primary citizenship we all have if you follow Jesus. Now, if you don't follow Jesus and you're in the room today or watching online, we're so stoked you're here. So glad. I'm giving you the thing for us as Jesus followers, right? We have a primary citizenship that needs to drive then our earthly citizenship. In fact, you may not realize that, but Jesus followers actually have dual citizenship, right? So like our friend Crystal Besmer that does so much of the host stuff up here, that's what she has and that's what her kids have. She's both Canadian and American, right? And so she operates in two different ways of seeing things. And what we see in the world of Paul is in one sense, in Philippians, he says, hey man, our citizenship is in heaven. In another sense, we see in the book of Acts where he's going to be flogged and it's illegal because he's a Roman citizen, so he plays this Roman citizen card. He's like, wait, you guys can't do this to me. I'm a Roman citizen. So Paul has both kingdom, heaven citizenship, and earthly citizenship, and that's true for everybody that follows Jesus. We hold both. Here's the thing I want to emphasize here, right? This next slide. Jesus and his kingdom values, they need to be infused in and to define and direct or throttle or give wisdom to all of like the earthly stuff. In other words, you know what? We're all citizens, I'm gonna assume. We all have civic responsibility as citizens. But we can't simply say, well, what's my party say? Or what's my party say? Or what's this say? Or what? We can't operate just purely horizontally. And if anything, the other thing about this is it has a backwater valve on it. You can't start saying, I'm gonna take my earthly things and shove them up into heaven, right? No, one direction. What Jesus wants flows down. We don't start pushing stuff up because it's usually just sewage anyway down here. So don't want to do that. And see, this is what Jesus kind of operates under. In John chapter 18, Pilate called for Jesus to be brought to him. And he asked him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus said, well, is this your own question or did others tell you about me? And so then Pilate says, dude, am I a Jew? Your people and your leaders, the priests, they brought you to me for trial. What have you done? Why are you here? What's going on? And Jesus answered something I think is so valuable for all of us. He says, my kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world. And I think that deserves a pause, right? Because when I watch and when I see sometimes people on both sides get fired up about stuff and about the other side, it's like fighting like the kingdoms of the world. Name calling, questioning faith, questioning faithfulness, questioning morals, questioning motivations, vilifying one side, demonizing here and idolizing there, excusing bad here, inflating bad there. Like that's the tendency and temperament. And then Jesus is like, no, but my kingdom doesn't work like that. And if my kingdom worked like that, yeah, go crazy, man. Go nuts. He says, but my followers do it different. I do it different. This needs to look completely different. Now, I'm going to warn you. I've said this for years. The way of Jesus in this world is dumb. It is utterly dumb. It is upside down and backwards. It just, like, you look at it and you go, it makes no sense. Makes no sense. Like, hey, when somebody hits you on the right cheek, turn the other. That's dumb. Right? I remember even watching Donald Trump Jr. at this, like, it was a rally in Arizona, but it was like a religious rally. And he goes, you know what? Turning the other cheek just doesn't work anymore. And I remember thinking, this is a religious rally sponsored by some Christian collegiate organizations. Here's a person, normally they quote the scriptures in a pandering way. Now it's quoting the scriptures and saying it doesn't work. I'm like, this is so weird because that's the only thing that will work. But we go, nah, it's dumb. It doesn't work. It doesn't play. I think that's always going to be the challenge of doing this stuff of Jesus. It's like, man, in this world, it's just too upside down and backwards. We're very tempted to do other ways. But if we're going to follow Jesus, we have to have that uncomfortable thing. And I'm not saying how we turn the other cheek. I'm just saying it's a pressure that we have to think about that we're called to that very thing, right? I think about the same thing with the disciples. They're hanging out one day. They're arguing about who's the best, which is dumb because they're dumb. And Jesus is the only best one in the room, so to speak. But he pulls them aside because everything teaches. It says he called his disciples together and he said, you know that the rulers of this world lord over their people and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be the first among you must be the slave of everyone else. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life a ransom for many. That's it. That's the hardest reorientation, right? It is, especially for us as Americans. It is for me, right? Like this idea I'm supposed to be a servant and a slave? No, I'm the master of my own destiny and I have rights and things that protect me. And like, this is a very different deal, right? But that's what Jesus gives the tension of, right? Those are the kingdom values that we're to use in our functional purposes. So again, if I bring up our graphic, you got to think in terms of like the Sermon on the Mount, Sermon on the Plain, fruit of the Spirit, the biblical definition of love, and all aspects of gospel kingdom stuff. Like, we have to figure out, man, how do I let that saturate my mind? And then I got to figure out, how does that play out in economics and governmental policy and all the stuff we have to worry about? When you're trying to figure out who you vote for, you should be using this as your model. Like, I want the Jesus stuff to be there, and then I got to care about all of this, and that might make it really hard, but I need to care about all those kinds of things and how all of that informs my policy decision-making. I'm not advocating that Christians aren't involved in policy and politics. Quite the opposite. I'm saying we should be very much involved, but not feeling like in the undercurrent of the same. We should be different inside that current as we're making a difference. And here's the thing I believe when it comes to this, it can be done whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or other. In fact, I'd say it must happen regardless of you're a Republican or a Democrat or other. Like, the Jesus thing must be the signature mark in whatever party affiliation you have. Remember this idea, in the world but not of the world? That's a hard thing to do, but I think that's what we need to do. So let's start to round third, slide into home, and give you some principles here. I'm gonna start with this idea, but put it a little different. I think we should be in the party but not of the party, right? Same idea, be in the party, man. Be a Republican, be a Democrat, be a libertarian if you wanna lose, whatever it is, you know? And all of God's libertarians said, see, there's like three. That's my point. All right, so. Speaking truth. All right, so. Love me, my libertarians, right? In the party, but not out of the party. Here's some tips for you. Acknowledge that both the R and the D are right and wrong at different times for different things. That's just going to be the reality. So don't idolize one and demonize the other. Don't excuse one and prop up the other. We have to be different. You can be in one, but kind of approach it differently. Next, except that Jesus would praise and scold different aspects of both the R and the D platforms and probably would not endorse or join either. Like, I ask people that, well, who would Jesus vote for? Who would Jesus, like, endorse? Like, I don't know, himself? I'm like, yeah, probably, you know, he's God, he can. But think about that, right? Here's another one. Avoid the trap of making your mission field a battlefield. Avoid making your mission field a battlefield simply because of the R or the D. Like, if you rant against all those people over there, right, then you're probably squeezing off a mission field, right? Jesus calls us to care about all people because they all bear his image. Next, abandon the notion that how one votes is a barometer of their faith or faithfulness to Jesus. I will let you in on a secret. I've talked to a lot of different Christians who are all across the spectrum, and one of the features they all have in common is they go, and I don't know how they can vote that way. Like, they do get, like, I don't know how you do that. That's really, so just accept, as much as you're going, I don't know how they do it, there's others going, yeah, I don't know how you do it either, bro. Like, that's in there. And so, like, even in this election, man, I'm talking to so many people. I got a friend of mine that's a policymaker in Idaho. That's their job. They're very much connected to the GOP, and they're like, I'm sitting this one out. I just can't do it. I know of other people that have been Democrats their whole life, and they're like, I'm so concerned about some of the wokeness agenda and the border. For the first time, I'm going with the R. I think people are very torn in different ways and motivated by different things, and I just want to make sure that we don't go, well, depending on where you go, it really is a barometer of how faithful you are to Jesus. Next, own that Jesus followers should be just as discerning and vocal about honesty, dishonesty, and human dignity in their own party as well as concerns about the other. Because it's really easy, again, to look at the other side and go, they're the bad guys, and they're always wrong, and our side is not. And I think the job of Jesus followers is to say, you know what? We care about Jesus' values in all realms of existence, and so we want to care about those things, right? Because there is a lot of, there's just a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of lying. There's a lot of vilification. There's a lot of just absence of dignity and respect to other human beings at times in this whole thing. And again, our job is to be different. Here's what I'm going to challenge. Be like Jesus in your party, right? Just be like Jesus in your party. What are ways you can do that? First, use your vote as a way to advance kingdom values for others more than just simply political ideology for you. Like, I think about that idea of Jesus saying we're called to serve. Like, just be thinking, like, I'm going to do this because I really care about serving people. We're going to disagree on the best way to do that, but think about it in those terms. Next, realize that your responsibility to seek sincere solutions and not just state ethical convictions. All right, because there's a difference. I know I do this too. Sometimes I'll be like, you know what? I voted my conscience, I voted my convictions, whatever it is, mission accomplished. And sometimes that wasn't really about solution. Like, one of the things I found really shocking after Roe versus Wade was rescinded is that abortion went up, right? Like, the assumption was it was gonna go down. So it goes up, and then you start to look at places that have the strictest laws. They also have the highest infant mortality rates, highest maternal death rates, and you go like, I didn't find solution. I found a stated conviction, but I need to find solution. And so we work more towards solution to really bring what Jesus wants us to bring to the world. Next, remember that those across the aisle are passionately loved by Jesus, and he calls you to love them too. Right? Passionately loved by Jesus, and he calls you to love them too. And then last in this, if you're primarily motivated right now by fear or anger or hate or revenge, loving them is hard. Then unplug from the toxic stuff that's fueling you right now, right? Because if you go, that's what I'm feeling. Yeah, both sides want to exploit that. They love to exploit that. They want you to be terrified of what's next, right? They do. I think that's where we want to be responsible. So I close with this. All Christians should be invested regarding policy and politics. They should. Again, don't be out, be in. And all Christians can be involved with parties and politicians. You can. That's great. But all Christians must be imitating Jesus as they do. That's it. That's the core of everything. Because disagreement is inevitable and natural, but division and disrespect is a choice. That's what we can control. We don't have to slip into that. We can be different. So here's what I'm going to guess. In the coming weeks, it may get worse before it gets better. In the coming weeks, you're going to have a friend, a family member, a neighbor, a coworker who's going to be scared, upset, freaked out, feel any number of things, right? And here's what we get to do. We get to be the ones who come in as peacemakers, faith-filled, trying to bring down the salsa level, trying to bring some comfort and care to a person, letting them know, you know what, it's going to be okay. No matter what happens, it's going to be okay. Like, we have to be that. We have to be that. If your side wins, don't spike the ball. If your side loses, don't get all angry and take your ball home. Like, neither one of those works, right? We have to be that different voice, that Jesus voice, that kingdom voice in the world that we're in. Let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, lots of ground in topics that can be very tense. And I know even what I've shared today, we're not all going to walk out of here and go, I agree, that's part of the thing. Like, we're all going to disagree. We're all going to have difference. We're all going to see nuance in how we come about these things. We're all going to have the, well, what about this or what about that? But Jesus, I pray that we also realize that what you call us to most is our unity. What you call us to most is that love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, those things that ground us in your kingdom values, and that you call us to be the servants of all. We're not trying to lord over, we're not trying to be in charge or in control, we're trying to be what you want us to be. And so I pray that you will help us to do that, even now as we get ready for communion. What a great day for communion, when we live in divided times. What unifies us in this room is you, right? Like, if we're letting our politics divide us, we're failing what you've called us to. We're not called to be divided over earthly things. We're called to be united over kingdom things on this earth. And I pray that as we pass the cup and we pass the bread, that whatever angst or ailment or irritation we may sense would evaporate. Whatever judgment we hold, whatever condemnation we may feel would evaporate. And instead, we would be bound by love and generosity, a sense of human dignity one to another, because everybody bears your image. Help us to be in those spaces in your name. We love you, Jesus, in your good name. Amen. So right now we're going to pass out.